You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Put it in park, threw open the driver's door, ran out the side of the car, across the front of it, and jumped right off the side of the bridge in front of me.
The only people who really pulled over were truckers.
He said, "We're going Hodge," and he didn't slow down. He went across the median onto the oncoming traffic, but where they could see him coming, they just got out of the way.
I noticed this plane was really low, went right in front of us, hit the fence, and it spun around. You know, 30 seconds more, he could have hit us.
And I went around that truck, and a guy stepped out from behind the truck and threw a piece of wood, and it shot through my window just like a spear and stuck in the back of the cab of my truck.
That's probably one of the stranger things I've seen.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to Hammer Lane Legends. I am your host, Tony Merkel, and alongside of me is my dad, Brian Merkel. And if you have a story or experience you'd like to share with us on the show, go ahead and shoot us an email. Our email address is hammerlanelegends@gmail.com. That's hammerlanelegends@gmail.com. Or you can go to the website, hammerlanelegends.com, hit the contact section, and you can reach us that way as well. We don't care how you contact us, but if you have a crazy experience and you want to share it on the show, just get a hold of us. And we don't care if you're a trucker, a police officer, an EMT, a fireman. If you drive for a living and you have some wild experiences, you know how to get a hold of us. HammerLaneLegends@gmail.com. Now, Dad, what's today's show about?
Well, let me tell you, Tony. Today we're going to talk to Tom, a man with 30 years experience in the driving industry. We're going to hear how he saw a small plane crash in front of him and what went on after that. Tom, how you doing?
Doing great.
Tom, listen, man, I do appreciate you coming on the show and talking with us at Hammer Lane Legends. That's going to take some time to get used to saying and stuff, but I'm really excited about it.
Yes, it is.
So, Tom, you're the first interview that me and my dad are doing together. So thanks for your flexibility with scheduling this with us. And Tom, you're a trucker and you've been in the industry for a while. How long have you been in the industry?
Over 30 years, about 32 years.
Okay. So 32 years, what got you going in trucking?
Well, it really wasn't what I planned on doing, but it's kind of weird, but my younger sister was murdered, and she had a son, and my mom was, you know, getting old, and I had to get out of that. Believe it or not, I was into music. And I had to do something, and I drove truck when I was in the Army. You know, I was a mechanic, but I drove truck as well. So I went to a school, believe it or not, in Riverside, California, and just got my CDL. And the only people that hired me was a moving company without experience. And so that's how I got into the business. With my sister, what happened with her, she had a young son, and I needed to step up to take care of him. And it just wasn't going to happen with the music thing. There was no money in that. So here I am.
Well, let me just say, Tom, it's nice to meet you. My name is Brian, and it's nice to meet you. I can totally, and I'm really sorry to hear about your sister. I know it's a long time ago, but I'm very sorry to hear that. But my experience was a lot like that. There was times I I did the moving thing for a little while because I had to get a job with experience, you know, get the experience behind the wheel. And it becomes an interesting life. And I've been doing it for 26 years myself, going on my 27th year. And it is an interesting, you see an awful lot behind the wheel. So I'm really interested to hear what you have to say, to hear your stories and the things that you've seen, because it's an interesting life.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, Tom, like, I don't have the story that you guys have on how I got into the industry. I've been in the I've had my CDL for a long time now. I mean, since I was 21, but I wouldn't say I was in the true trucking industry until I started driving for the company I'm at now. And, you know, a lot of guys got to go through the crap jobs to get to a place where a company says, hey, you have enough experience, you have enough of a clean background, and we're going to hire you. And you feel like, yes, I finally got that good trucking job. Well, I got that good trucking job right away because of my last name. So, I mean, my dad recommended me to get into the company, and because he was there for over 20 years, they brought him in brought me in. And, you know, I've been very fortunate that I didn't have to jump through the hoops that you guys had to, but I know it can be a freaking pain in the butt trying to get into the trucking industry that shows the promise of the financial gains, but going through the circus to get there. And it sounds like that's kind of how you had to do it, huh?
Oh, yeah. I walked in and asked if they were hiring. They said they weren't. And I said, man, I got a CDL and I can't get a job anywhere. And I started to walk out, and he goes, hold on, come back over here. And, you know, the rest is history. But I've been in the same industry for the whole time. I like it.
Yeah, I hear that. I can imagine. You get to meet different people, get to see things. You get, you know, it sometimes that's the perks of the job is getting around and getting in, you know, getting to know people, getting to see somebody and talk.
Right. Yeah. You're not just backing up to a dock and waiting for them to forklift it off your truck and yeah, hand your bill waiting and you're on your way.
Exactly.
You actually, it's a hand load job. You know, you pad wrap. Sometimes we pack the boxes for them. You know, you have to, anybody, you know, it's not a job for anyone.
That's true.
You've got to be able to deal with people.
That is very true. That is a job that is not for everyone. It can be very difficult. I mean, it is a physically taxing job as well as the communication with people, keeping people happy, keeping the customer satisfied, and to your job at the same time. It can be a very taxing job.
Right. And getting that 70 to 80 foot of vehicle through neighborhoods, sometimes yes, apartment complexes, you know, I'm sure you said you've done it. So you know what I'm talking about.
I do. I know exactly what you mean. And that is the hard part of the job. And it's also the satisfying part of the job. When you see where you've gotten yourself into and you're like, I did that successfully without taking anything out, without hurting anybody, and without killing someone's lawn or taking out mailboxes. It's a very satisfying job.
Well, I must say, you know, in the beginning, I've made some mistakes. Trust me.
I hear that.
Yeah. I think a lot of people have made mistakes. I mean, listen, I haven't been in the industry nearly as long as you guys, and I've made plenty of mistakes. It's just part of the job. And I can't imagine doing what you do, man, like the toll that it takes on the body and stuff. But like what my dad was just saying, Tom, let me ask you a question. Do you get this? I mean, to this day, for me, at least, I've been driving trailer for, I think, going on 8 years now. And when I get into tough spots, like if you're down in Philly and like you're on Erie Avenue and it's like a busy stretch of highway, and all of a sudden you pull into a place and they say, oh no, you're supposed to back in from the road, so you got to back out into traffic just to turn it around and back in down the lane. When you get that all done successfully, do you still get this like almost like a euphoric feeling, like, whew, I wish somebody would have saw me do that, because that was awesome? Do you ever get that feeling?
Well, kind of. Not so much anymore, but yeah, I mean, I still feel good about it. The good thing with me is I have a crew that I hire, you know, they drive their cars out and meet me. Guys I've known for a while, and, you know, different, I use different crews all over the country. And, so usually they're there ahead of me. They're really good. They're very, very well-mannered people. And they're also not a ground guide. You're really good as well. So I have to admit, a lot of it's my crews, man. Because backing out into traffic is not a good thing. And I've done it plenty of times without any help. So it's nice when they're there and can stop traffic. And, you know, they even get out there sometimes to try to stop traffic. And people just, like, act like they're going to run into them. People are crazy, man.
Yes. Yes, they are.
Yeah. So I must have missed this in the beginning when you were talking. So do you own the company? Is that what you're saying?
No. I own my truck. Well, gotcha. It's my last truck. No, I don't own the company. No, I drive for an agent for you probably know who I drive for. I think you've seen my truck. Yeah. I posted it. You helped name it. You said priest taking highway confessionals, but yeah. Man, I was raised Catholic, but I'm just a Christian. But I thought a better name for it would be preacher. So you came up with the name though.
Yeah, that's actually, I forgot about that till just now. I remember you you posted in my other show's fan group, right? And you're asking for some names for the new truck.
Yes, and the first one was you, and you said the priest, and I decided, well, I don't want to call it a priest, so I'll call it a preacher.
That's
same
awesome.
Thing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Taking the highway confessions. So I love it.
Yep.
I absolutely love it. So you work through this I guess this other company, you own your truck, but so you mentioned about how you hired guys to help. So you're in charge of, you know, basically getting your own help and stuff for this jobs.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm 100% everything, fuel, everything, labor, everything. It comes out of my end.
Gotcha. So let me ask you, I mean, is it hard to lock down on some guys for helping you? I mean, I can imagine you probably, at least especially first starting out, you first hire a few guys, and I imagine some of them probably didn't pan out because, you know, it sounds like it's a lot of hard work that you do, and guys are signing up to do something, and they're more interested in getting the paycheck than actually doing the work. Do you ever come across that?
Oh, yeah. In the old days, it was horrible. You'd have to get help anywhere you could. A lot of times the agent would, you know, like back in the day, I'll say this, I used to work for Global Van Lines. They're no longer in business, not really. And that's when I bought my first truck. And you call the agent, whatever agent, it was one in North Carolina or something, and they booked a job. It's their job, you know, and then I'm the driver, so I'm going to go do it. I agreed to it. And they tell you, oh, we can't get you any labor. And I always tell them, well, then I guess you can go out and do the job yourself, because if I don't have anybody to help me, you know, I'll just come to your warehouse and pick it up after you, you know, go do an agent pickup, and then I'll show up and then they'd find you help. But it'd be the worst help ever. It'd be, you know, they'd no experience at all. And they didn't know how to pad the furniture. They didn't know how to, you know, use a dolly, which is amazing to me, but you know, you do what you do now. The there's with Facebook, social media, and there's a new app that I'm going to mention because he's a buddy of mine. He lives in New York, Michael Kenny. He has an app you can get in the Play Store or Apple Store. It's called Mago, MAGO. Hope I pronounced it right. And it's, you know, we guys sign up on it, drivers sign up on it, and tells if they're certified, you know, background checked, and what companies and their level of experience. But most of these guys I've known for a while, you know, with Facebook, there's mover pages, there's truck driving. I'm sure you've seen the truck driving pages. Well, oh, yeah. We have pages like that too that are dedicated to the moving and storage industry.
That's the beauty of the modern age that we're living in now. It is not a hit and miss like it used to be, like when we first started driving. I remember years ago how difficult it was getting into the industry and doing your, you know, paying your dues, as we used to say. And nowadays it's a lot different. The industry needs drivers. So, you know, it's a lot easier getting into it than it used to be. But it doesn't mean it's any less daunting. of a job. But that's really interesting. It's neat. And it's neat that you have a friend who actually designed an app. I mean, that's the stuff that this modern age that we're in is just phenomenal as far as being able to get a hold of people, hire people, use people. You know, it does make it a lot easier. And like you said, you know, with this app, you can check out to see, you know, if they have experience, what kind of experience they have. You know, are they licensed? Are they bonded? Are they all those things that are that you need to know? So that's really cool.
Yeah, I love it. But, you know, pretty much the guys I've been using for the last 5 to 10 years, I just told them, you need to get on this app. And because I just put all the information in, you know, the address, blah, blah, blah. And they, you know, they don't have to keep calling me or, you know, hey, I forgot the address of what the dog ate, you know, the dog ate the paper or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I just send it out and it's there. So, and only they can see it. If you know, when I assign it, nobody else can see the address or anything like that. They just know the city. But until I assign it to them, they can't see the address or anything like that. It just says, you know, a job in, I don't know, Chicago, let's say. And that's all they know. Will you go there or not? So yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
it makes it a lot easier. And these guys are, it's not like I remember having to get guys at truck stops. I went to the fire station before and hired firemen, and then they had a call. They had to go in the middle of the job because there was something that happened. Or you go to the truck stop, they'd smell like booze or something else. You know what I mean? The funny smoke stuff and just like, you know, I can't imagine that happening today, but back in the old days, it did, you know, people were just, you had to take who you could get. Can't do it by yourself.
Oh my word. That's,
you know,
for sure.
You can't load 15 or 20,000 pounds of furniture and boxes and everything else. You can't do it by yourself.
That is true.
Even back when I was young and in good shape and everything else, you know, I'm an older guy now and these guys don't hardly let me do anything. They just say, do your inventory and talk to the customer. And if you want to do something, you can, but we don't really want you to.
That's awesome.
Just drive the truck and do the inventory. And they get paid real well, though. You know, that's one thing I wish the trucking industry could all bond together like they did and, you know, demand more money.
Yes.
Because everything costs more, but it seems like we're not getting paid much more.
Well, that is the truth.
You know?
And that's a really good point, Tom, because being somebody who's newer in the industry compared to you and my dad, I've noticed that talking to a lot of older guys like you, I'm not saying that you're old, but older in the industry, that it seems like, you know, at one time, the trucking industry was like a stand apart. If you do this, you're going to make money that most people don't make in their life. And it just seems like, to me, from the outside looking in of time, that it seems like the world has caught up to the trucking industry as far as payout goes. And it's still a great paying job and you still make good money and stuff. But it just seems like, to me, looking at the timeline, it seems like the world is starting to at least catch up to the trucking industry. And I often wonder myself if that's just me or other truckers see that too. But it sounds like you kind of agree with that.
Absolutely. They have no idea what a cost of living raise is. The people that own these trucking companies, van lines, you know, they just have no idea. They, when they're sitting in their high tower or wherever they sit and, you know, enjoy their life, they got to realize we're out there just, you know, I'm not going to say how much I gross because it you would freak out, but
sure.
It's a lot, but that doesn't matter. It matters exactly. How much you get home, your net.
That's exactly
right. And it's
not
that much. It isn't really. It's a fraction of what I gross.
Sure. Sure. I can imagine. With all that overhead. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Everything has to go perfect. My truck breaks down. I have to pay for it. Lease a trailer, my agency, everything on the trailer. It's their trailer. So, you know, then they're good people and they pay better than most other agencies. But it's not them. Their profit shrinks every year as well. Believe sure. me, I've sat down with the owners and they've shown me that, you know, that we have to become creative, you know, like my mother would always say, you know, that, you know, we're on a fixed income, and I used to laugh, but I get it. you have to live on a fixed income, you know, can't just do anything you want.
Yeah, I understand living on the fixed income. I mean, even though I'm newer in the industry compared to you guys. What's interesting about my situation, Tom, is that my dad is 51. I'm 34. So I remember seeing him go through this process of getting in the industry and the whole process of living on a fixed income and going through the companies that didn't pay hardly anything. But the only thing they're truly paying you is an experience. They know they're not paying you good money. They just know that you need them in order to get where you want. They don't ever expect you to retire there. They're paying you crap money because they're a company that just wants guys who are cheap labor, and they're going to just rotate in and out of there like a revolving door until they get a better job somewhere. And it's weird to say it like that now that I said it out loud, but that's truly what these companies are, some of them, right, Dad?
Oh yeah, that is definitely the way it is. And and I think more so, less so now, more so back then, more now is there's more guys coming in even to a company like what we do, where they're fresh out of school, or, you know, within a little bit of time they're into doing good. When I started, you had to have 3 or 4 years experience, you know, behind the wheel and doing this. And, you know, a company like a local LTL carrier, like what we do, would not even look at you if you had less than 3 or 4 years experience over the road and this and that. And I had I had those crap jobs where you're running a suck truck and you're, you know, getting into all kinds of weird stuff. You're doing the moving and storage stuff, and you're doing, you know, all those things and to get that experience. And so, yeah, it's a different world now. But they are abusive when it comes to that.
Yeah,
that companies have been abusive over the years with that kind of stuff, just to get someone behind the wheel, you know, to use anybody.
You know, Tom, I'm going to tell you this real quick, and Dad, remind me if I'm mistaken, but okay. I don't think it was too long ago that you and I were talking. And so you used to work for a company. I'll say the company name because you don't work for them and you're never going to go back there anyways.
Right.
But you used to work for one of those companies, and the company is called Johnson Motor Lines.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's in Eastern Pennsylvania,
it is,
right?
Yes.
And so you were at Pitt, Ohio for years.
Yeah.
And you had told me you still see the truck you used to drive at Johnson out on the road.
Yes. The same vehicle, the same truck, the exact same number, everything. I mean, they had never replaced that truck, and it was old when I drove there.
So, I mean, that's an example of, you know, one of those companies that they're not interested in having guys that are there for 30 years as much as they're interested in having cheap labor to get the job done. Yeah. And it's just, you know, I guess that speaks of leadership and what you want out of your company. Some guys that own companies maybe don't want to turn it into a Pitt, Ohio, like you and I drive to.
Right.
Like the company me and my dad drive for, Tom, Pitt, Ohio. It is one of the top LTL companies in the Northeast region of the United States. The owner of the company, he could be retired by now, but he's still involved in the company because he cares about the industry and he cares about the drivers he has working for him.
Right.
And it's just night and day. And I see that, and I didn't even work at Johnson. But Tom, you have some interesting experiences that I would like to kind of hit on a little bit and see where things go. But in your email, you sent me some of the experiences, and one of the experiences that jumped off the page of me, literally, because you sent a picture with it, is that I guess you saw a plane that went down or something like that while you're driving. What happened?
Okay, so my nephew used to ride with me, the one I told you about, you know, my sister's son kind of raised him, and so I got him into, you know, he wasn't doing anything, and I got him to turned him into a pretty good mover. And so he was my road dog. He'd ride with me and him would do a lot of jobs, just me and him. Someone I could count on, you know. So we're driving in Arizona, going east on I-40. It's going to sound like the Eagles. You're almost, I think we're pretty close to Winslow, but we're out in the desert. I know, it's crazy, right?
It's all right.
Your guitar and everything. And I noticed this plane was really low. And it spun around, you know, it just turned, made a quick turn, and not even 2 or 3 truck lengths, he went right in front of us, hit the fence, he crash landed, hit the fence, spun it around to the way you saw it. So I pull over And me and my nephew go over there and to see if they're okay and a couple other. The only people that really pulled over were truckers, by the way, about three or four of us. You know, 30 seconds more and he might have, if, you know, timing's everything, he could have hit us.
Oh, my word.
But thank God he didn't.
Yeah.
So we get out and they're sitting in there. And, you know, I was hoping, because I didn't want to see anyone, you know, dead. And they weren't. They were fine for the most part. She had broken her wrist. And so we get to him and, you know, the plane's pretty much intact. I mean, it's messed up. It's pretty trash, but it's still intact. And I go, hey, can you get out? And he goes, no, I can't walk. And I go, oh, my God. And he goes, but my wheelchair's in the back. He was a paraplegic. Ooh. Flying a plane. But I mean, I was like, I thought the worst, but it was just, you know, he was fine. We got him out. We picked up his wheelchair. Two good little movers are, and carried him off to the highway. Then the police showed up and took our statements. And she had a broken wrist, I believe. And it was amazing. Glad everybody was fine. And it was an amazing thing to see. Sad, you know, and it turned out it wasn't a sad story. His plane was, but they were all right. That's all that matters.
Wow, you got that right. A plane can be replaced, man. But, you know,
yeah.
Whew, that had to be frightening. That just had to be frightening for both them and you to actually witness something like that. To see that happening in front of you has just got to be a frightening event.
It was, man. I mean, it got my, I was out of 15, Equitan, I was out of 15, you know, and I just, like I said, I just, pulled over. It was the right thing to do. You know, me and my nephew, we went out there and like I said, the only people that stopped were truck drivers. We all went out there and everybody's from different directions and they were fine. Like I said, you see her sitting on the wing in that picture I sent you, holding her wrist. And then, we got him out, put him in his wheelchair but we, you know, we had to carry the wheelchair because, you know, with him in it, because it was a desert.
Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the amazing things I find so fascinating is that for the bad rap the truckers take all the time for, you know, Oh, you're in my way and, you know, this and that and all these other things. They are the first people to pull over to help someone in any situation on the road. I've seen that so many times being, you know, driving as long as I have. You see those things a lot. You see truck drivers pull over. They see an accident happening or they witnessed it. They pull over. Something like what you saw, you know, all the truck drivers pull over. I mean, every four-wheeler drives by and just looks and they're in amazement, but they just keep moving. They're not in amazement enough to go help. But truck drivers are very helpful people. It is awesome to be part of that.
Well, yeah, but it's your duty, too. If you saw it happen, you're supposed to stop.
Yes.
Because they, you know, somebody might need to know. So they never did contact me. So I guess everything, you know, was fine. But I gave them a statement and that was the end of it. I mean, I don't know what was going on inside. I'm just sure it was, I don't know if he ran out of fuel. I can't remember. I think maybe it was something like that. Maybe he had a fuel leak or something. I don't know. But it turned out fine. You know, landed the right way and caught the fence and spun him around, like I said. But besides that, everything was fine.
That's really interesting. I mean, I know when I'm driving down the road, there's times that you see cars do something crazy. Like you can tell when somebody's texting and you see traffic stopped and somebody else isn't stopping. And every time it's the same thing with me. I'm not just sitting there watching them going, oh, 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 because I'm just like, oh God, it's going to happen. And I'm going to see this. And I hope everybody survives, you know? And then thankfully they always stop so far from me, but it's always the same thing with me. So if I would have saw what you saw, I would have been like, my hands would have been on my head and I would have been freaking out because I, you know, it sounds so scary. And the idea that these cars are just driving by, you know, I think part of it is that people, when they're in their cars, they're there because they're not working. They're going from point A to point B. They have somebody, somewhere they want to go, and things like that. And they're just like, oh, I'm sure they're fine. You know, keep going because I got a dinner appointment, you know, whatever. But I think truckers, we're just already in the mindset of working and we're out there and, you know, it's just, I do see that a lot too. And even like crazy stuff where I remember when I was a kid, I remember seeing on TV as well, like one of those police chase videos, and they were trying to chase this car down for a while. And this guy was just going until they got, I guess, on the CBs, and they told the truckers, and the truckers got together and they blocked the highway so that this guy couldn't go by and stuff. And that's how they stopped this guy from running from the police and stuff. And it's just like, you're not going to get people to do that. Like truckers, it's just, we got stories, man. We do stuff like
that's why we got stories.
Yeah, it's incredible. And that story is incredible, Tom, man.
That like, is. That's fascinating.
I would have been freaking out. Like,
true story. Even have a picture.
Yeah. I'll post the picture on the website with this episode, too, so that people can see it, because it's definitely, I mean, you can tell this thing crash landed and it's like buried in the dirt, and you see a wheel hanging off in there, and she's just sitting there on the wing, you know, just kind of like watching traffic. Like, I can't, you know what she's doing right now? She is watching the traffic, holding her wrist, saying, ow, my wrist hurts. But my God, did that just happen? Did I just literally survive a plane crash? Like, nobody expects to survive a plane crash.
No, that is amazing.
They were both very, very, nice people for one, and they both were very calm for what had happened. She just was in a little bit of pain, but I think she was more in shock, and she didn't really probably realize, because I broke my ankle before, you know, doing a job like I do. I've broken my ankle. I've got stitches. I mean, you know, I was born in 1960. So, I mean, you know, I've been in fights. You know, as a younger person, I was in the military. I've been in fights. Nothing has beat me up more than the moving industry. I mean,
I can believe that. Yeah.
I've fallen off the ladder onto the street with internal bleeding. You know, get up, finish your job anyway. Something's got to be done.
Yeah.
You know, just got to do it.
So you,
I don't know. I have, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you saying you fell off a ladder, had internal bleeding, and instead of going to the hospital or something, you finished your job.
Yeah. I mean, I have so many friends, a buddy named Frank, he was on a job in Mississippi, and he drove for us, and he was about 70, but in really good shape. He could outwork most anybody. The guy was just a freak. I'd never seen anyone like him. And he was on a job, and the help was complaining, and it was getting late. But he had, you know, Frank was old school, had to get done. So he sent them all home and said he'd finish up by himself. Well, the next day the customer comes in, and he's curled up, laying on the floor. So he figured he just went to sleep, tried to wake him up, and he had had a heart attack and passed away.
Wow.
I mean, it should. Yeah. I mean, and had a bunch of friends from at least three or four from our company that have just recently all passed away from cancer, which is kind of alarming. You know, you wonder what's going on there, but, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, this trucking in general is just not a healthy lifestyle. It really isn't.
No, it's not.
You don't eat right. I try to eat right. And, it's hard. You got to try to take care of yourself.
You do. It's one of those jobs that you don't have a normal sleep schedule. You don't have a normal eating schedule. You're on the road a lot. So you don't even have, you don't always have healthy food with you. You know, it's hard to always have what you need to have as far as, you know, health wise goes, and being healthy and getting that sleep pattern. I mean, you know what it's like. I mean, you know, one day you're in bed at 6 o'clock in the morning, and the next day you might not get to bed till noon. That's, you know, I drive at nighttime, so I'm speaking to my schedule, but yeah, it's crazy. I mean, there's, it's so difficult to do this job. And so many people don't realize the stress that truck drivers are under all the time. And so it's fascinating. I guess one of the things that's fascinating to me is that people just kind of, ignore all of those things. And on the road, just the way people are, just the almost, I don't want to, not everybody's disrespectful of truck drivers, but so many people, especially when they're in the mode of, I got to get to work. You're in my way. I've got to do this. I'm on my way to do that. And you're in my way. And so they don't realize sometimes the danger that they're flirting with in doing the things they do around truck drivers. But it's just I feel so bad for you know, that guy, that helper that you had that passed away just doing his job, you know. Just,
well, he was a driver, actually.
Oh, wow. That is, yeah, it's so sad to hear.
Yeah, it's been a while, but mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a real Hammer Lane legend right there. Oh, Frank. My.
Yeah, it sounds like he was. Yes.
I want to say his name because
yeah,
he's really, really no family or anything. So I mean, he was a legend, man, in the moving industry. Nothing he couldn't do. Nothing. Drive, carry stuff. He wasn't a big guy either. Real short and skinny, and just you'd never think that, you know, that would have happened, but it just does.
Yeah.
You never know. So what'd you think about the one story that I on my email about the kids coming out of the forest?
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up to you, man. before we get to that, though, I want to say to the drivers out there, and this is something that is just really something that I care about, and it's really important to stay healthy and as best you can. And I've lost drivers in the short time that I've been driving trailer and stuff. We've lost drivers because it's just, you know, the health issues that come along with this industry. And it's takes a lot more work on our half than normal people have to go through. Most people, they're like, I go to bed at a certain time, this, that, and the other. We don't have that. And they say that exercise, eating healthy, and proper sleep is key to healthiness. And those are things that as truckers, we don't have access to all the time. And so I'm glad you guys hit on that. And it's really important to, especially the younger drivers like me, just remember that we are mortal. And it's very important that we take care of ourselves now. It's something that we're going to try to look into, is maybe starting a health section on our website down the road. But Tom, talk to me about these kids dressed in black coming out of the woods, dude. Like, so you're driving down the highway and you see this, what happened?
All right. So, I was in Oregon. Our company's based out of, Portland. And, I don't remember, it's been a while, but I was doing, I was making deliveries, people's furniture, and, stressed out like I shouldn't have been, and just really tired. It was raining really hard down by the coast. I think I was on one, and I was kind of stressing out because I knew that there was a tunnel, and I was pretty sure I could get through it. But if I couldn't, then I would have to make a U-turn somehow and drive 100 and something miles, you know, and find another way. So I'm not going to drive, you know, I'm not going to be one of those guys. So I'm driving, and there's no shoulder at all, okay? And I'm not sure if it was Highway 1 or, something off of it, but it was a highway. So I'm driving, and it's raining, and I see something up ahead, and I'm thinking, man, I'm going to finally see Bigfoot, you know? It's coming out of the forest. It's like, man, I've always, you know, my wife has a, she's had an encounter, but she doesn't think she had it. But anyway, that's a whole nother thing. But, so I'm like, oh my God, here it is. And I get up close, and they're all in black, you know, teenagers, maybe oldest look, maybe 18 years old. And they're all in black. They're very pale and, really pale. And they're coming out of the forest, man, and they're waving at me, and there's nowhere for me to pull over. I would have been more of a hazard because there's no shoulder, so I would have blocked the entire, there's one lane going one way, one lane going the other way, and so I couldn't stop. It would have just been too dangerous with the rain, and it was real dark and everything, so you couldn't, it would have been a bad idea. So, you know, I just, everything though told me, don't stop, you know, Joe, there's something weird going on here. And so I just went up the road. When I finally got cell service, I called the local, you know, I called 911 and said, hey, there's some kids. They're coming out of the forest and they're all in black. And I don't know, they were waving like they needed help or I don't know. But I go, it would have been dumb for me to pull over because I would block, you know, the whole road. So it would have been more of a hazard to do that.
Yeah.
Best thing to do would be let the authorities take care of it. So that's what I did. But yeah, I don't know whatever happened, but it sure freaked me out, man. I mean, that really bothered me. It still does to this day because I've never seen anything like that. I mean, where were they coming from? There were no cars. Well, there was no shoulder to park anyway, but there's nothing for miles. I don't know what they were doing out there, why they would be coming out of the forest, because they were literally coming out as I drove by.
Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, you, Tom, you know me because you're a listener from my other show.
Black Eyed Kids, right?
What was that?
The Black Eyed Kids.
Yeah. And so, like, if I were to see something like that going down the highway at that time in the truck or even in my car, like, I'm like, nope. I ain't stop. Sorry, kids. You're all together. You'll be fine.
You're young. You'll be healthy. Keep running.
Yeah. I'm just like, no way.
They were like laughing. It looked like they were laughing or they didn't look like scared or anything. I was the one that looked scared.
They weren't in distress. You were.
Oh, big time.
That would put me in distress.
I did the right thing. I know.
Yes. Sounds like you definitely did.
I called the cops.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I would have definitely just kept driving and let the cops figure it out. But more than likely, guess what? The cops showed up and the kids weren't there because it's some kind of apparition or something. I don't know. I believe in haunted highways. I believe that. Listen, there's a lot of drivers out there that talk about seeing a woman in white. A lot of truckers say that very common story. They see a woman dressed in white walking down the highway. They drive two more miles down the road and they see her again walking down the highway. And it's like, what the heck is that? It's freaky.
Yes.
And if you're like driving, let's just say, Dad, for instance, you drive line haul. So you drive from Allentown, Pennsylvania to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. What, it's a 4-hour drive?
Yeah, 4.5.
You're driving across the state. Well, going from Allentown, Pennsylvania to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you're driving a lot of dark roads out in the middle of nowhere. And if you see something like that, you keep driving.
I guarantee you I ain't stopping.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
no way.
It was nuts.
Yeah,
well, it was crazy.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Oh my word.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you, Tom. You keep driving and let somebody else figure it out. They got out there, they can get back. If there's truly innocent stuff, figure it out. You'll be fine. Pack animals. So you'll be fine.
Yeah.
But Tom, so you saw some kind of strange lights in the sky they explode or something? What'd you see there?
Well, it was kind of funny because they were talking about a missile test where it was like if you shot a bullet and then took another gun to shoot that bullet. So I'm driving. I believe I was either in Arizona or California out in the desert. I believe I was on 8, which is one of the Southwest, it's the closest interstate to Mexico. I mean, it's right there. You can just look over and there's Mexico, but there's nothing there. I mean, it's just all desert. So I'm driving and they said that there was going to be this test out, you know, I think out of from Vandenberg or something, but you'd be able to see it all. That's what they, you know, the news was saying, and that's the information the military was putting out. But man, all I know, I had totally forgotten about it, and I was just driving, and I was heading west, and there was like an explosion in the sky, and it lit the whole desert up like it was daytime for, you know, 10, 15 seconds, and then it was gone, and I remember listening to Coast to Coast, and that's what, you know, they were saying, you know, was this really true or was it something else, you know? You've heard Coast to Coast.
Oh yeah,
kind of like your show. So it's a good show for the most part. But so I don't know what it was, but it was so bright that it kind of, you know, when a light bulb or something flashes, the old fashioned cameras, I'd make you know, it's kind of hard to see for a second.
Yeah.
It was that bright.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really bright. So, I mean, I don't know what it was, but it was crazy. I mean, it was kind of scary. You didn't know what was going to happen next, you know, but yeah. Nothing did. It was fine.
Let me ask you, you are out there on the West Coast and you have SpaceX out there with Elon Musk and shooting rockets into space and everything. And I see pictures online of the rockets that he's shooting out, and they make these weird formations in the sky, like these trails. And when he's launching these satellites, it's like a bunch of lights in a row that he's launching out there, all these weird things. Have you ever seen any of the SpaceX stuff?
I've seen just what you've seen. I've seen it in pictures, but now one of my guys that I work with down in LA actually did see that. And that's what it looked like. Exactly like you said. I think he even took a picture of it.
Yeah. I mean, dealing with the industry that I deal with, I mean, obviously we're breaking into a new industry with the trucking stuff here, the podcasting, but my other show is a paranormal show, and I get a lot of people sending me pictures. And one of the most common phrases I get in email and Facebook Messenger is, "Have you seen this yet?" I'm like, yep, you're the fifth person today, you know? And I still get people sometimes, they'll message me pictures of SpaceX launches, and they're like, "I've never seen anything like this before. Have you ever seen anything like this?" And it's like, you know, then you tell people, yeah, it's SpaceX, things like that. But, you know, what I find interesting, this is going down my conspiracy rabbit hole, but it is what it is. Hi, I'm Tony Merkel. I'm a conspiracy theorist. But I think, you know, if there was anything nefarious going on, I often wonder if it would be indistinguishable from things that we already do with SpaceX. Like, if something were to really truly be, you know, out of the blue, unorthodox and not really, you know, let's just say from Earth. Like, I think that it'd be easy for them to just say, oh, that was SpaceX, you know? And even if the officials didn't come out and say it was SpaceX, because they're conditioning everybody around that area to say, oh, with something weird in the sky, SpaceX. If something really does pop off, I think a lot of people are just going to assume, oh, it's SpaceX. Elon's showing, you know, throwing another car into space. Oh, there goes Elon Musk. He's going to Mars this year. Bye, Elon. You know what I mean? You ever think about that, Tom?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I moved a guy recently, about a year or two ago, pretty recent. He used to work for, I don't know if I should say the name of what it was. I don't know what I should say or shouldn't say, but, he worked for a place that makes a lot of top secret stuff. We'll put it like that. And it was out in Tehachapi, California. It's out in the desert kind of, but it's kind of high elevation. So it's kind of, I don't know how to, really weird landscape out there. It's just really cool, but kind of eerie. They were saying that there was some kind of a, under one of the mountains, said that if you're there every night, you see these weird lights. I did look, but I didn't see any. But anyway, the guy that I was moving said, I asked him about it, you know, about the lights, or is there like a secret laboratory in this mountain? And he goes, I don't know about that. He goes, but I'll tell you one thing. He goes, if you can think of it or seen it on Star Trek or anything else, he goes, man, we're way beyond that. We're way beyond all that. He goes, you have no idea what with this alien and all this other stuff. He goes, I don't know anything about that, but the government and private industry both are way beyond anything that you can dream of. So I don't, what you take that for whatever.
Well, no, I absolutely believe you. One, what you just said reminds me of the SpaceX, or not the SpaceX, the Space Force logo they just dropped this week. It looks just like the Star Trek logo. Dad, have you seen this?
No, I haven't.
You got to check it out.
Oh, I will.
The Space Force logo looks almost identical to Star Trek, like identical. And I talked to a guy, referring to what you just said, Tom, I talked to a guy at one of my deliveries, I'd say probably about a year and a half, 2 years ago. It was a casket place. I went around the back. It was like all dirt. And I backed up to this makeshift dock and just to get off a 100-pound skid. I'm like, this couldn't go on like a small truck, like a straight truck. But I got to talking to this old guy, and he owned the place. And he said that he used to, back in the 60s, be an engineer for the military, and he worked on a lot of top secret stuff. And he didn't know who I was when it comes to my other show and stuff like that. But he said that the things that they have out now, they were working on or had access to back in the 60s. Wow. He said it's nothing new to him. And so if underneath that idea, it's like, wow, imagine the technology they have that we just don't even know
that
about.
That isn't out yet, that they haven't released. Now, the things that they're sitting on.
And it's like, Tom, if you ever thought about this, I think about this a lot. When it comes to technology, I often wonder if the technology that the government has that we don't have access to, and I understand, I mean, some of the things, it's like, you know, top secret for our security. You don't want, you know, the Russia and China to know every tool we have in our toolbox. But I often wonder if we saw what they had, if we would identify it more as magic than technology, you know?
Yeah, it's a good thought. I don't know. I think, you know, I would think it was technology myself, but yeah, I could see that. But
I think about, like, back in the day, the way they treated people with, like, the witch trials and things like that. I think, like, if I went back in time, so let's just say go back 100 years from now, and I had my cell phone on me, I had a laptop on me, I had my key ring on me with my beeper for my truck, like that kind of stuff. I think people would look at that 100 years ago in 1920 and be like, what are you? You know?
Yeah. If you went back to the Middle Ages, they'd either tie you to a stake and set you on fire, or tie stones to your feet and throw you in a lake. And if you came back up, you weren't a witch. And if you drowned, or whoever it was, I guess if you came back up, you were a witch. And if you drowned, you weren't. So either way. And then if you live, somehow it came loose, then they burn you at the stake. So,
yes.
So, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Okay. I guess I misunderstood you. Yeah. If you go back, people would think it was magic or something crazy, but I thought you meant like now, because even if I was to see the Starship Enterprise, I mean, whatever. Right. But I'd be amazed, but I wouldn't be too shocked. I don't know. It just, I think I was in the military. I've seen some weird stuff and nothing too crazy, but I mean, heck, I remember coming back from Vegas going, when I still lived in Cali, we saw the, what is the name of that? The stealth fighter, but nobody knew about this yet, but we saw it. Wow. And me and my buddy, you know, we were like, we just saw a UFO. And we made an agreement never to tell anyone, you know, a few years later, because we're movers, man. We're never going to hear the end of it.
Oh, yeah, I hear that.
And so years later, not too many, a couple years later, came out, and I'm like, that's what I saw. You know, that's and then every time I see one, to this day, it still amazes me. I mean, they look, you know, like something out of Star Wars. They're amazing to see. I don't know if you've ever actually seen one fly. They're amazing.
Yeah, I've never seen it in person. I mean, I've seen it on video and things like that, but never in person. And I can't imagine seeing that for the first time, and it's not known to the public. Like, you literally think you saw a UFO. That's incredible, man.
Yeah.
That's absolutely incredible. And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Truckers see crazy stuff.
Yep.
And that's why I just think it's about time that there's a show recording these trucker stories. And Tom, I appreciate you coming on and joining us on Hammer Lane Legends, man. I really do.
Hey, man, it was awesome.
Well, that's the show, everybody. I really hope you enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, please share the show with your friends. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, TikTok. We don't care where you share the show. But if you share the show, it helps the show grow, and we greatly appreciate that. So until next week, keep the hammer down in the hammer lane.
right across these plains and prairies, Rocky Mountain highs, fade off into the distance like ghost riders in the sky. Black smoke and white line, steel horses side by side. It's more than just a living, y'all. Hell, it's our way of life. We're the last of the cowboys, the giddy-up cowboys. 18 wheels on the concrete, it's a slow and dying breed. Rolling like Jesse James, a modern-day outlaw gang. If you're out here riding with me, come on back and make some noise. We're the last of the cowboys. It's a family tradition, diesel's running through our veins. Our daddy showed us the ropes, we were born in the fast lane. Branded by our heroes, taught to saddle up and move. We keep this country rolling, we're damn proud of what we do. We're the last of the cowboys, the giddy-up cowboys. 18 wheels on the concrete, it's a slow and dying breed. Rolling like Jesse James, outlaw game. If you're out here riding with me, come on back and make some noise. We're the last of the cowboys. Third time generation, a little old school salvation. Blazing trails across this nation, sea to shining sea. We're the last, we're the last, we're the last of the cowboys. We're the last of the cowboys. We're the last of the cowboys, the giddy-up cowboys. 18 wheels on the concrete, it's slow and I breathe. Rolling like Jesse James, a modern-day outlaw gang. If you're out here riding with me, come on back and make some noise. We're the last of the cowboys. Modern-day outlaw gang. We're the last of the cowboys.